You might feel just fine tackling some home improvement projects yourself. Chances are, if there's an issue with your house's siding, you may want to call in the professionals. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lucky to have some great general contractors with us to spend time. They come by every couple months, and today they have some great advice for identifying and addressing issues with your home siding, and we can deal with other issues as well. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg, here to share what he knows. John, welcome back.
Glad to be back, Larry.
Thank you. And Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison has some great ideas as well. Good to see you, Ken.
Good to see you, too.
We have lots of things we can talk about with siding, for sure. Al, my neighbor just down the street, I see was working on the he's about probably about a 1905 or 6 home, about the same as our home, mm-hmm. With the old wood siding. And he was out there scraping, and I expect there's going to be some painting done. And that siding's probably been on
since 1904.
Yeah, since whenever so that's a type of siding that lasts pretty well.
Well, wood siding that was put on back in the day was, back in those days, was put over walls that weren't insulated. And so moisture was able to move freely around them and through them, basically. And they tend to hold up very, very well. It's when we started insulating wooden houses that we created problems, because we would put insulation in, there wouldn't be vapor barrier, moisture would work their way through odd places like around windows where they mm-hmm. couldn't insulate, and then start pushing the paint off from the inside and creating all kinds of problems. So we've spent a lot of time fixing those problems now.
Mm-hmm. But still a good siding, John.
Wood certainly is a wonderful siding, Larry. It's just that we need to do things differently because, as Ken said, mm-hmm. houses are living things, and they have evolved, and we need to evolve. Now, Al's house there in 1905 is what we call a barrier system. The siding and the tar paper behind it were there to keep all of the water out. We also have now what's called a rain screen system, which is really very different. And the way Ken and I are specifying, and Ken is installing, since I only do specifications, is we're using what are called rain screen systems so that the wood that we're putting on now can last just as long as Al's wood.
Mm-hmm. Any type of siding, actually, cement board or any siding that goes over is spaced out away from the house.
That's a real good point, Ken. We see an awful lot of things that you would think would resist moisture forever, like cement board siding. I mean, it's made out of rocks, isn't it? It yeah. shouldn't burn, it shouldn't melt, it shouldn't do anything. And yet we're seeing tremendous numbers of failures in CertainTeed, in Hardy Plank, and in others because they've been installed incorrectly and water is getting behind them. So people really need to think and download installation instructions when they think about siding their house. They need to study. One of the big problems that we see as home inspectors is we see the house that was done by the low bidder who didn't read the instructions. Yeah. And I know Ken bids against these guys all the time. Yeah. But we see brand new siding jobs that basically last 6 and 7 years and have to be torn off and redone.
We're talking today with Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from EdVest, Wisconsin's college savings plan. EdVest is committed to helping Wisconsin families start saving for higher education. Information is available at edvest.com, and EdVest conversations are ongoing on Facebook and Twitter.
Support also comes from American Players Theater near Spring Green, presenting 8 plays now through October 20th, including Arthur Miller's All My Sons. Schedule and ticket information available at AmericanPlayers.org.
Looking at alternatives today for siding or different types of siding, and certainly answering your questions about siding and other building issues with our two guests today, Ken Adams and John Freiberger. John, what are the more green alternatives for siding?
Surprisingly, Larry, I think the greenest alternative for siding is wood. It grows on trees. It has a tremendously long life. The embedded energy is low. And if we apply it correctly, it can last literally for 500 years. Other things all have to be manufactured. They probably have more embedded energy. They've got petrochemicals in them. And certainly the lifespan that we're seeing on most manufactured materials, and Ken, correct me if you disagree with this, but I haven't found a manufactured material yet that'll last as long as wood.
It's hard to say. I mean, cement board has been the mantra for the last 15, 20 years, and it seems to be holding up very, very well if applied correctly. But yeah, you're right. Wood is just a fantastic product. It's it can be farmed. It could be machined well if it's prepared correctly and installed. Usually what we like to do, and I'll just take a little digression here, we like to back paint all siding that we put on. So if you paint the back and paint the front, it'll make the wood much more stable. It'll accept and release moisture more uniformly, and it'll last longer. If you do that, if you add a rain screen system, you do the correct water barriers on the house and air barriers, you should have a siding that lasts certainly your lifetime and well into the future. That same is true with some of the manufactured products like cement board. There are a lot of other new products out that claim to be green. Some are, some aren't. I think one of the ones that people talk about in siding and roofing is they say PVC siding, vinyl siding is green, and I don't agree with that at all. It's very expensive environmentally to make, and it has it's not particularly easy to recycle properly. Another great siding is stone or brick.
Yes, but there we're more into the masonry. I mean, we have alternatives like stucco and exterior insulation and finish system and masonry. And it is true that those will probably last the longest.
Mm-hmm. What should we be looking for that may signal a problem with our siding?
Water entry into the house is one of the things that we're seeing. We are finding siding that is put up, and we do not have good flashing. We do not have a good water barrier. We're seeing vinyl siding, and vinyl siding, Larry, is a rain screen. Now, let me explain just what a rain screen is.
Okay. Right,
everybody's got a screen on their window or on a screen door or something, and a little bit of rain comes through it. Not all of it, but some comes through it, and we've got to make sure it drains out. When you look at vinyl siding, most of it has little drip holes on the bottom of the siding so that the water that gets behind it can come out. So in other words, it is meant to weep out water. Well, if you put that siding up over, let's say, an oriented strand board sheathed wall with no water barrier, in pretty short order, you're going to get water into the house. The other thing you're going to get is you're going to get mold, because the oriented strand board, which is usually chip poplar and other fairly soft woods, can grow fungal growth very, very rapidly. And we see a tremendous amount of misapplied vinyl siding, which is, as I said, a rain screen, so it needs a barrier behind it. I think what we need to think about with siding, Larry, is that before the siding is put on the house needs to be watertight.
Ah. So that's a major consideration. Are there things to consider in terms of the best type for a particular home of siding, best type of siding?
There are some restrictions. Vinyl siding has problems with wind. So most manufacturers say do not apply above the third floor or above 35 feet because it has to be nailed loosely. And so if you get a lot of wind, you can end up with problems with it. I think Ken has seen this.
Well, that's precisely what people do, though. They'll build a three-story apartment building, and they'll do the first two floors in brick, and then the third floor they'll do in vinyl to save money. And it looks pretty when it's new, and it looks good on paper, but that's where you run into problems. I just the day before yesterday talked to a gentleman who's got four or five units. Every one of them is leaking, and it's leaking right where the vinyl sits on top of the brick. So what I did a little investigating, and what happened was, people would forget to put the flashing in. And they wouldn't put the flashing in. They wouldn't seal it properly. John's absolutely right. You have to make sure the building is waterproof before you apply the siding. And it looks to me like on this large building, maybe one employee was skipping And so like every fourth or fifth apartment has a problem. So you have to go, and it's hit or miss to see. You almost have to wait for damage to decide how to attack this thing. And it's funny, but it's not, because it's going to cost these people a lot of money. There's mold. John was right about mold. That's a serious issue. Now, you know, how far do you go with mold remediation? I'd be interested in knowing how some of your listeners, what kind of problems they're having with their siting.
Yeah. Well, Jim in Winnebago County has a question relating to installation, I believe. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
You're right, Larry. We're going to install some cement board siding over some new polystyrene foam, or some new insulation anyway. And I heard you say some time ago that a lot of cement board siding is installed improperly. So tell me how to install it properly.
All right, John Freiberger.
Jim, whoever you're buying it from, go to their website and download the installation instructions. Make multiple copies, and when the contractor comes, hand him one and say, this is mine and I'll be checking on you. The typical things we find is the siding is exposed for water. So where you maybe have a dormer on the house, or the second floor siding meets a first floor porch roof, they're putting the siding dead tight to the shingles where they need to have 2-inch clearance. They're putting it within 6 inches of the ground, which is simply not allowed. You need to use a PVC product like AZEK when you get down near the ground. They're allowing water from windowsills to leak behind the cement board siding, which causes efflorescence and eventual paint loss. So the detailing is very important. The instructions used to be lousy. Now they are getting much better. And the other thing you have to be concerned with is if it is not installed to the manufacturer specifications, you don't have a warranty. So make sure your contract with the contractor says that he will follow the installation instructions. Don't count on him to actually download and read it. You give him a copy and then check as they go along. The other thing, as I mentioned earlier, your house cannot leak before the siding is put on. So even if you have foam, I would still put a wind and water barrier over the foam, because I don't believe in the foam taping is considered to be adequate, but I really prefer to have a belt and suspender sort of system. What would you add to that, Ken?
Well, no, you're right. It's, if you just go right over the siding, or right over the foam insulation, it meets the basic criteria of the code, but it's not really adequate for over time. So if you put a vapor barrier or a water barrier over the top, like 15-pound felt, Tyvek will work, especially if you do a rain screen and keep air away, or keep the siding away from the foam, you'll be in great shape. The other thing, when you pick your siding, there are different manufacturers, and you want to download the particular manufacturer's instructions for that siding, because one contractor or one manufacturer will say you have to put the joints tight. Another one will say, no, you need a gap in between. They all want them to be painted on the edges before they're installed, you know, when you have two joints that butt together. There's a lot of little details, and they all add up to a good job if you do it right. And like I said, go ahead.
That's great. This contractor insists that a vapor barrier or something should not be put underneath the siding, that the house needs to breathe. I don't really believe that.
I'm not sure what he means.
Well, a vapor barrier, no. Well, what if you use a product like Tyvek or one of the other house wraps, they prevent beads of water from going through them, but they do still breathe. So vapor that is coming out of the house can still go out through the house wrap. Felt is the same way. It is breathable, but yet it is a barrier to droplets. So there's a difference between stopping water vapor versus stopping water droplets. So if you were suggesting to him you wanted to wrap the exterior of the house with Visqueen, he would be correct. That would be a wrong thing to do. But if you're looking at something like Tyvek or Felt or Typar or one of the other proprietals, those do work just fine.
Okay.
So that goes on the outside of the foam board?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Richard in McFarland, your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. My house was built in 1976. It has a cedar product. I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm having a tough time with woodpeckers pounding their way through it, actually into the blue styrofoam underneath.
Oh, Lord.
Wondering how I fix that or what I do about it.
How bad's the problem?
Well, this was the first year that it got to the point where they actually got all the way through the board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure about all of the habits of woodpeckers, but my understanding is that it gets worse over time because when woodpeckers have babies, they tend to stay in the same area. So it will get worse if you can't come up with a solution now. What we do if there is a small, one or two, three, four holes in a piece of cedar, we could actually drill a plug out of another piece of cedar, drill a circular hole, and glue that in, and then paint over it, and you'll never see it. If it gets to be more significant than that, then people try everything. They put owls up, inflatable owls. They have mechanical spiders that crawl up and down the wall. John, what are some of the other things people do?
Well, they do netting.
Netting.
They put netting over the area that where the birds mm-hmm. typically attack, and that can work.
Yeah, they tend to like corners of houses and up high and out of the way, too.
That's true. It seems to be somewhat seasonal. It seems that they do a lot of pounding during mating season, and then they find that there's a nice way of making a cavity behind it. You can try the owls. I think that's the most effective. The repellents we have studied, we had a house in Monona that Ken and I both worked on, mm-hmm. and we spent a lot of time studying all these things that are sold to get rid of woodpeckers, and none of them worked other than the owl. And I believe that these people have a cedar house on the lake and a history of woodpecker issues. By moving owls around so that they aren't always in one place, I haven't heard from them for a while. Ken, have you heard from them in a while?
Well, it's unfortunate, but I've fixed a few holes since we did the project. So it's a chronic issue. If you could encourage the birds to move to another location, that would be the best bet. But it's hard because they love it there. We love to see the birds around us. But try the owl first, I would say. Is it really bad? I mean, do you have a lot of are they going along one board in a long procession, or are they hitting it here and there?
Well, they tend to follow down a board, hole after hole. But these are small, and I can fill those. But this past year I was gone for a while, and they actually penetrated all the way through the board and into the blue. Underneath.
And once they break through the siding, when it rains, it'll get moist, and then they go for moisture because moisture and wood mean bugs, and that's food for them, and they'll just keep poking around.
Yeah.
So keep it filled. See if you can try one of the owl product, inflatable owl or the bouncy owl or whatever there are out there now. There's a dozen different ones.
Mm-hmm. If it's one particular corner, you could put on a PVC product like Azek, which is heavier, and they're not going to be able to peck their way through. Mm-hmm. And you can stain it to look like the cedar on the rest of your house. So you might try that if it is localized. Mm-hmm.
And we did have a caller who called in about this. Marlene had the same problem with woodpeckers. She hangs suet blocks nearby, and the woodpeckers prefer those. She leaves the suet blocks up all year. So in her case, those woodpeckers, at least, liked the suet blocks and stayed away from went away from her cedar siding.
Well, that's like encouraging a child to go and play with a proper toy instead of an electric socket or something. That's a great idea.
There you go, Richard. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Zeroing in a little bit on choosing the right siding for your home and siding issues today with our two guests, Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates, Fitchburg. But, of course, we'll take other questions that you have as well. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Love to have you also post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question, comment, or maybe even if you got a photo of a problem area that you want us to examine, we can take a look at that as well. And, of course, email at talk@wpr.org. Looking forward to hearing from you and looking forward to hearing what Kathleen Dunn has today at 2 o'clock. Her guest discusses Medicare policy and the future of that program on its 48th anniversary. That's today at 2 o'clock. Right now, though, Ken and John, and let's go to Carla in Winnebago County. Hi, Carla.
Hi. We have a cedar site at home. It's about 20 years old, and we religiously put a preservative with UV on it, and we have a mixture of sun and dense shade, and it's getting darker and darker and darker. It's a dark brown now, and we were trying to preserve the light color, and we're thinking of going to a stain, either a translucent or a full stain, and we're wondering if that's a viable thing to do, and would it last longer than just the preservative?
Ken Adams?
Well, I'll start. I think John will have something to say about this, too. When you talk about a stain, you're talking about a semi-transparent exterior wood stain, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
And they tend to last, if applied correctly, they tend to last 3 to 7 years, depending on how much sun they get and how often they get a chance to dry out after rainstorms and stuff.
Okay.
Opaque stains are less appealing in an aesthetic way because you lose all the grain of the wood.
Okay.
And so, but they are a little bit better barrier because not only do they soak in, but they sit a little bit on the surface too, and so they will last a little bit longer. My sense is, if you've got a wooden house and you're trying to preserve the look, the grain is really a pretty thing. And if you
it is, but it's so dark brown, you really don't notice it until you get up close.
Yeah,
because it's darkened so much. And I don't know if there's a way to. It was beautiful in the beginning, real light color.
Sure, and that's what happens. It gets darker and darker over time.
Yeah,
and you've kept it from getting gray, though, huh?
Oh
from
yeah,
becoming
yeah.
gray. Yeah, that's yeah. well. So it's still natural looking, like. And that's nice. But what I would do is test a little area with a small amount of opaque stain and a small amount of semi-transparent and see what you like.
That's a good idea.
You could even grab a piece of scrap lumber and do it on that first and see how that compares.
Okay, but the stains would last a little longer than the
preservatives tend to only last about 3 years max, right? Is that what you're getting
exactly.
out of it? And stain will last. You may get a little bit longer out of the stains. It's hard to say in the sun because I don't know how much sun you're getting.
Yeah, not much, but that's where it gets the wear or the fading or whatever.
Sure.
Okay, well that helps. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And just back to the woodpecker for a minute. Mark emailed us and said he's had luck getting rid of woodpeckers by hanging aluminum pie plates on a string on the roof fascia board near the area. And, they swing around. And
oh, so it becomes a mobile, mm-hmm. basically, a noisy mobile.
Well,
we could just get a big tent.
Oh, man. John in Richland Center, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I'm a carpenter for 26 years. I was trained in the Carpenters Union. And my old carpenter teacher taught us that the best thing to put on a house is cypress. And if you can't afford brick, I say that Western red cedar is the next best thing. And as far as vinyl siding, I only put that on chicken coops.
Well, I just want to differ just a little bit, John, because vinyl has its place, and it has its place for people that can't afford a higher, I don't want to say higher quality, but a more aesthetically pleasing siding. So, if money's a real big issue, there is a place for it. However, I agree with you. I think Western red cedar is a great siding to put on, especially the vertical grain materials, the stuff without knots. It's a quarter sawn is another way to think about it, and also it's. I think you'll agree it's really very important to back prime or seal the back of the siding before it's installed.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Frank Lloyd Wright loved cypress.
Yeah, cypress is great.
And the cypress that he put on in the 30s, 40s, 50s is still in very nice shape. The problem with cypress is there isn't a lot of cypress left anymore.
Yeah, there's no farming of it, is there, per se?
I know of no cypress farming. I think it takes too long. And so I have a worry about using cypress, and I also have a worry about some of the siding that we're seeing that's made out of tropical hardwoods.
Yeah.
A little bit concerned about how green and green a product those are, and if we're hurting things. Remember, when you're looking at cedar, John gives us a good warning. We want western red, and we also want dense western red. And as Ken said, how it's cut and the thickness of the wood makes a big difference. There also are different grades of cedar. And you can get a tight knot select, which is sort of a fuzzy face cut that has knots in it, that if you get it the right thickness and put it up on a rain screen, will last as long as the most expensive quarter sawn stuff. But you will see cedar siding made out of incense cedar, and I've even seen so-called cedar siding that was obviously pine.
Oh.
And these people put it up, and after 20 years, you could stick your finger through their house. So you really have to check. You know, the problem is that we've become the Walmart nation. We are looking at the bottom line.
Yeah.
And John reminds us we need to think about quality, because sometimes nothing is more expensive than the cheapest product we buy.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good point.
Very good points. Thanks for calling. Julia in Mondovi, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for the program again.
Sure.
We have an old 1950 house, and of course it doesn't have insulation in the walls. And it's a house that we're going to get ready to sell, so we want to replace the siding. It has old slate siding on it, and underneath has good shape felt paper. And we want to remove the slate siding. We're going to leave the windows in. It has the wood trim windows, but we're going to replace them with pocket windows. But we'd like to know, you know, about flashing the existing windows and doors, because we weren't going to take that off. And when we talked to an insulating contractor, they said they could carefully cut through the felt paper and then reseal it, because they were going to blow in cellulose into the walls. And then, of course, you know, we're reading, you know, if we don't do vinyl siding, you know, we'll do a rain screen. But if we do vinyl siding, what do you suggest to put over that felt paper after it's all insulated? Because, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, it's done properly before we sell it. And we don't have any venting in the overhangs, but we kind of wanted to keep it. It's like a craftsman style house, and we'd like to keep it that way. And we're just wondering if there's a problem with that, you know, with an insulated attic, if we have to do something special. It has old plaster and lath walls on the inside.
Well, Julie, let's start by asking you to do just a little bit of research on venting, because venting is really, really important. And I'm pretty sure Larry on his Facebook page has coravent.com up there.
Yes.
And this is a real consumer-friendly website, and they are specialists in making venting that you can put on historic houses without seeing it. And I know Ken and his crew have done many houses in Madison where I've done design work, or others have done design work where they have vented old houses, and you can't even see that it's there. Mm-hmm. So do take a look at that, because we do want to get the moisture out of the house. When you insulate the walls, you are going to be changing the characteristics of that house. As Ken mentioned earlier, things are not going to dry as well. You have no vapor barrier on the inside, although you could put a liquid applied, basically a paint on vapor barrier, if you'd like. Now, you say the exterior has slate. My guess is that what you have is actually asbestos cement board, usually 2 foot by 1 foot sections, sometimes with some grain, sometimes not, sometimes with a little curvy bottom on them. Is that what you actually have on the exterior?
Yeah, they're little shingle type, but yeah, it's a, you know, they're maybe like a half a foot by half a foot. They look like little type shingles. They're not.
Oh, really? Like, okay, mm-hmm. So they really do look more like a slate. Boy, I'd love to see a picture of that.
Yeah.
One of the things, speaking as a home inspector, who observes buyers and sellers in action, make sure that you talk to a real estate broker who you're going to list the house with before you do anything. Because you want to make sure that you don't make an investment that you're not going to get a good return on. The next person who buys this house from you may have a totally different idea about how they want the exterior to look. So before you put money at it, make sure that it's a good investment, because you're selling. It's not like you're staying there. Now, to answer your question quickly about the tar paper, Put another layer of tar paper on, but then put a layer of Tyvek over the tar paper. And the reason for that is that if you've got a self-exposure, you put on a dark vinyl siding, you're going to generate a lot of heat. And in some very, very rare occasions, we've had people actually melt some asphalt out of tar paper. So if you have the Tyvek over the top of it, that will make sure that that doesn't happen.
What about the flashing of the existing windows, then? Is there anything special to do?
Now, you said that the house had wood siding originally and then that the slate was put over it?
Nope. It's just slate siding, and then the wood is the trim, you know, with mm-hmm. the wood windows, you know, where they're kind of with the lip sill coming out, you know, like
yes.
the old-fashioned kind. Yeah. And that's all in good shape, and mm-hmm. so we were just going to leave those in and then replace the actual sashes.
So what we're looking at is basically getting a flashing that goes up behind the tar paper and over the top of the windows. There is a publication, though I don't know if they have a website. If you will email me at frei@chorus.net, chorus like a group of singers, C-H-O-R-U-S, I will give you the address where you can order a publication that we hand out to a lot of contractors, because it shows you basically how to flash and air seal almost everything. It's published in Minneapolis by the EEAB or something or other. Ken probably has a copy. I can't even remember the name of the association. But I'd be happy to put you in touch with them. I think it's about an $8 book. And I'd order two copies and give one to your contractor and keep one, because it's a lovely little book.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Thank you very much. And Julia, thinking about what you're going to do with your house, it reminded me of a story of a friend told me about his brother, brother and his wife had a home on a lake on a Madison Lake, and they were going to sell it. So the kitchen needed to be really redone, and he decided to do it himself because they weren't in a big hurry to sell. So he spent about a year, you know, here and there, and they finally got that kitchen the way they wanted it, put it up for sale. They sold it in a week. They had the closing. They moved out, of course. And then about 10 days later, they thought, well, let's drive by and see the house. They drove by, and the house was no longer there. they had flattened the house and were putting up a great big house. And so you never know. And he said, I spent a whole year fooling around with a kitchen, and I could have just avoided all that agony and pain, and I'd have been fine. So there you go. Roger and Madison, your turn. Hi, Roger.
Yeah, thank you very much. I've got a commercial building that has an FS stucco wall paneling system. And that was done in 1987, Larry, and it has failed.
Yep.
It's delaminating, and it needs to be replaced. And I'm trying to decide whether I should just replace it with a new EFA system, or should I be looking at something else in terms of siding this building. I should mention it's a restaurant, so it needs to have a quality look.
Yep.
Generally, we find that the exterior insulation finish systems have about a 99% failure rate back from the 1980s.
Yep,
I think
that's about right.
10 years ago, we got it all the way up to a 95% failure rate. But we do have details now for back drain systems that will last a very long time.
Yeah.
You need to have somebody detail it who knows what they're doing. The areas, there are different thicknesses of mesh that you want to use in different areas to resist impacts. But there really is nothing wrong with the new exterior insulation finish systems, other than that we have found when we do quality control work on large buildings like hotels, the last one we did, we actually had to fire the contractor and hire another one because their crew was so untrained they were unable to follow the application instructions. So you can get a quality product. It just needs to be well designed. Fortunately, you do have a very good contractor there in Madison who knows how to do back drain systems.
Mm-hmm. Who would that be?
I I have been working with Xander Solutions, who actually I think are in Middleton, for many years. And they do know how to do back-drained systems and also back-drained stucco systems. And a back-drained stucco system is another possibility if you want something that is really cementous. What you don't necessarily get with that is the insulation value, but that can be designed with insulation value as well.
I see. Very good.
Thanks, Roger.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I got more confidence in it now. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate your call. And Cheryl in Fond du Lac, it is your turn. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi.
What's up with you?
My husband and I are building a playhouse for our two daughters, and today we're hoping to put up the siding. We have masonite siding that's 1 foot wide, and we've primed the back, 2 coats of primer, and earlier in the show we heard that wood siding needed to be painted on the back, and I didn't know if wood siding and masonite siding counted the same and we should be painting the back also, or if the 2 coats of primer were fine.
Well, if on the back side, having it primed is a very, very smart idea, and 2 coats of primer will be just fine if the siding doesn't have a lot of moisture coming through it. Are these going to be heated? Is this house going to be heated?
No, it's just a little outdoor playhouse for the kids. We do have house wrap around it and flashing around the windows.
Excellent, excellent. So you want flashing around the windows, you want flashing over the doorway, but also when you do the siding, probably even as important or maybe even more important is all the cut edges, all the sides of each piece should be painted before you install it. And sometimes when you put a joint together, you put two pieces together, and this house may be small enough so you don't have a butt joint, but when you do that, we put a piece of felt behind it, and we paint both edges, and then we put the pieces together so that we have a seam that's sealed up all the way around. The bottom edge is the first thing is that'll show that as a deterioration. But you'll see, over time, little bubbles start to occur on the bottom edge of the siding. And that's primarily because water has some adhesive qualities. It'll just sit there, and if there's any cracks or small microscopic openings in the paint, it'll just seep in and it'll swell up the masonite, and that's the beginning of the end, basically. So if you paint it all up very well as you put it on, and then keep a coat of paint on it, it should last certainly your child's childhood and well into the future.
So we have 2 coats of primer on the back, and have a coat of primer on all of the other surfaces, but we should also paint like the front and the top and the edges before we put it up. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's nothing wrong with painting the front, but make sure you get a good coat of finish on the edges, all the edges, before you put it up. Then after you put it up, you could finish paint it.
Okay.
Am I making okay?
Primer primer doesn't count as a coat of finish.
It's hard to say what kind of primer it is. A good quality primer, if you put 2 coats on, probably would be helpful. The manufacturer probably has a recommendation, and I would check with them.
Okay.
What we usually do when we do a siding is we keep a little, like a mason jar with the paint in it, and we usually match the finish paint. We dab it on as we do the work, and then when we're all done, we paint the whole thing. That's probably the simplest way to do it.
Okay. Now, I know we won't have any butt joints, and so we don't need the felt because it's only 6 feet by 8 feet, and we've got...
You'll need it on the corners,
though.
You'll probably need it on the corners, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good luck with it, Cheryl.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates Fitchburg, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network, talking about fixing up your home. We've been zeroing in on siding, but we'll take other questions or comments as well about other issues relating to your home. with our two guests, Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction, John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg. Tom in Duluth up next. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you? I have two questions, and I'll tell them, and then I can take them off the air.
Okay.
Number one is you were talking about that vinyl siding isn't the greatest, but if you had to make a choice between vinyl and aluminum siding, what would be the better of the two in the guest's opinion? The second one is I have aluminum siding right now, and in the next year to 2 years, I'm going to probably paint it if I don't replace it. And is that advisable, and is there any special precautions to take before I do paint it? Right now, when I rub my finger over the aluminum siding, you know, there's a dust type of substance that sticks to my finger.
Uh-huh.
And
it's chalky.
And so those are my two questions. You got any questions before I get off the air?
No, I don't think so. I think I'll just talk briefly about the first question. John can answer the second one here. Vinyl versus aluminum. Well, it's debatable. There's some positives and negatives to both. Vinyl, there's an old expression, not that old, but an expression in construction, vinyl is final. It will last a long time. Once it's gotten past its initial stage, it starts to look a little tired, and you can't really do a lot to bring it back to life. Aluminum, you can. One of the downsides of aluminum is that if it dents, it's almost impossible to fix. So if you have a hailstorm or even a lawnmower that spits some rocks onto the siding wall and creates dings, short of replacing those pieces, you won't be able to fix those. The other thing about aluminum is that it's 100% recyclable. So when you take it off, you can recycle the whole thing. The whole product can be reused. Vinyl, you can recycle it, but it's much more there's much more work involved in it, and there's much more of an environmental impact in creating the polyvinyl chloride, especially on the workers. So those are the positives and negatives. With regard to paint, John, John's expertise, so jump in. Talk about chalk.
Well, we're getting some oxidation there and some reaction to the ultraviolet light. But the great thing about both steel and aluminum, which Ken has mentioned, which you can't do with vinyl, is you can paint it. And so much of it is being painted, Tom, that if you go to most of the major paint manufacturers, they are going to have a special paint for metal siding. So if you go to Sherwin-Williams or whoever, there's a lot of good quality vinyl metal siding paints out there. Mm-hmm. But again, as we keep harping on, download the instructions. If you're doing it yourself, follow them. If you're not doing it yourself, give a copy to your painting contractor. But you should end up with excellent adhesion and a good long life. The ability to paint is one of the things that really does add to the life of both steel and aluminum, because all siding gets damaged. Mm-hmm. You know, vinyl siding, the corners always get busted up by the lawnmower or the kids throw a ball against it. The nice thing about metal sidings is you can replace a piece, and if you're painting it, you can make it pretty much match in.
Yeah. I will tell you that I owned a home in Monona, and before we moved to our lake home, I had it painted. It's an aluminum home. Had it painted, and with some good quality, some guys that knew what they were doing. And so it was prepped properly, painted properly. I drove, now that was 19 years ago. I drove by the home a few weeks ago, and it looked great, and it was the same paint. That's 19
well, there you
years.
Go. Yeah, it's all in the prep and the proper applications.
That's correct. Good quality workmanship, good quality product, and there's no reason why you should not get a 20-year life out of paint over a metal siding.
Yeah, it was just wonderful. The men and women, they were actually, a guy and a gal did the work, and they just did a wonderful job. Eric in Endeavor, we turn to you next. Hi, Eric.
Yeah, I have two questions. One of them is I took my ledger off when I was building the deck, and I noticed they didn't put house wrap Tyvek behind it, and there was some little bug trails in my insulation, my foam insulation.
Oh, yeah.
And there, there are termites, and there are a lot of carpenter ants in my area, so I'm wondering how to identify what that is. And hey, that's my first question.
Well, not being a bug expert, I would say you have to capture one of the bugs and before you can identify it. You can't really tell by their trail. But
all right, Larry, when are you going to have a bug expert on, Larry?
pretty soon.
Actually, Phil Pelletieri will be on pretty soon. Judith will have that information for you in just a minute, Eric.
I'm just teasing. And my second question is, I have 2x4 trusses, and I was up in there. It's quite an expanse, and they seem like they want to be sagging a little bit. If I just put a 2x4 crossways and attach the two sides of the roof together, would that be good support for that, for extra support?
Well, let's start with the trusses. Are these engineered, manufactured trusses, or are these something that somebody made on site?
No, they were engineered.
Okay, so if they were engineered and they were applied to code, don't mess with them. Yeah, it's not a good idea. Are you seeing sagging, or are you just imagining that because they're 2x4s? Go ahead.
Well, I'm just imagining it.
Okay. They're probably not.
Down the road.
Yeah, these are built. Probably you have what's called Fink trusses, F-I-N-K, and it looks like the roof boards. They're called the top cord, and the bottom cord has a W in the middle, and it's for support to shorten the spans. And they're smartly engineered, and it's actually a big no-no to cut them. But there's also specific ways that you brace them, and I wouldn't I wouldn't mess with them unless you speak to somebody who has an engineering background.
Yeah,
and
awesome. Thank
okay,
you.
And with regard to your ledger board, there's no Tyvek behind it, but you also want to get flashing. There's two ways to do it. You could either flash it up the wall over the top of your ledger and down. Or you could flash behind your ledger and hold your ledger away from the wall using some sort of spacer materials. In the old days, we used to take half-inch lag bolts and washers and hold them away from the wall. But there's some things out there now that are better. And that'll allow moisture to flow outside of the wall, down between the ledger and the house. And the former way of flashing over the top of the ledger is a way to keep the moisture, as another way to keep the moisture away from the house.
Yeah, okay. That's actually what I did. I'm lucky I took that off. The stuff they had on there was horrible looking, so I took it off, and I'm glad I did because there was a bunch of really, really short lag bolts, and they're not even attached to anything.
Oh, Lord.
There's about four lag bolts actually attached to my frame with 12-foot span.
Oh, that goes back to what we were saying earlier, is one of the biggest problems with siding is people who don't flash it properly. That happens so often that you have premature failing because of flashing, and that's when you get low prices and you have amateurs or people that aren't really trained do the work. That's the first thing that's missed. So pay attention to that.
And Phil Pelletieri, our insect guy's on August 27th. That's when he takes on.
Show him a picture of your bug, Eric.
Yeah,
when he comes on.
Posted on my Facebook page, he'll identify. Laura emailed us and said, if vinyl siding has put on incorrectly and has started to mold, could that moisture also cause an issue with the cement of an enclosed porch? My cement floor gets moist when humid and occasionally has a smell during those most humid days. Do you think fixing the siding would cease the moisture of the cement? Here's an amateur. I don't think so. What do you think, John?
Larry, I think you're right. What's happening there, she mentioned, is a humid day. And, of course, this concrete is going to have a certain thermal inertia. So it is going to stay cold as the temperature outside rises. And at some point, it's going to become what we call a first condensing surface. The dew point temperature and the concrete temperature are going to be the same, and you're going to get condensation on the concrete. Nothing to worry about. Good concrete gets wetted thousands and thousands of times. She does talk about the vinyl siding getting moldy, and Ken, maybe you can answer this question. I inspect so many houses. I go around on the north side of the house, and I find this green plant growth streaming out from underneath the vinyl siding. I don't seem to find that as much with steel or aluminum or with wood. Is there something about vinyl siding that attracts green plant growth, or is this an installation issue? Have you seen this, taken it off, and had a situation like Laura has?
I have seen it, but I really don't know what causes it. My assumption was that because it's on the north side of the house, it's not getting as much sun and drying out as fast, and so it's creating an environment that is cool and moist and probably a pretty healthy for plant growth, but or fungal growth. But I don't know. That's just a speculation.
Well, wouldn't that siding? It's kind of loose anyway. It has to be loose. It can't be tight.
Right. That's
and
yeah.
It
that's
just
true.
Allows an area for things to get behind it. And
well, that's vinyl siding is made. You're right to be nailed on loose. It's supposed to hang on the nails and not be nailed in tight. If it's nailed in tight, it'll buckle up in the sun and shrink in between, and you can have cracking and all kinds of stuff. There's also vents in the bottom of it that allow moisture out, but that also allows a lot of moisture to find its way in too. So I don't know. I don't know what really causes it. That's a great question.
Something for us to study, and that's some program will have an answer.
Yeah, there we go. Well, Jim in Cross Plains might have some part of an answer. Jim, hi.
Hi. You guys have been talking. I'm a building forensics person. I get involved with failures, and I've done primarily work with Portland cement-based or gypsum-based products. And you guys were talking about a lady who wanted to put material on a side of a kid's house, and you were right on about moisture. I would also add to that when she places that she makes sure she doesn't do it in a sprinkle or light rain of any kind, or that the side of the structure is dry when she puts it on. I've had cases where
there were problems. Well, you know, Jim, we have to take a quick break to take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us. If you have more to contribute, why hang on. Otherwise, we will be back with our guests. Stay with us. It can certainly be stressful when something needs to be fixed at home and you don't have the time or maybe the money to take care of it. But sometimes letting it go can end up costing you a lot more money in the long run. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Lucky to have two pros that know a lot and have good time sharing their experiences as well. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison, great to have you with us, Ken.
Oh, it's good to be here, as always.
And John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates Fitchburg is his partner for these programs. Always a pleasure, John.
Great pleasure.
Great to have you with us. And Jim in Cross Plains was online with us talking about moisture in siding before our news break. Jim, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Jim, you bring up a really, really good point about the environment when you're assembling something on a house. It's so important to be aware of what you're doing. You know, painting in high humidity or in temperatures that are on the edges, putting siding up when it's wet out, if it's beyond a certain point, can cause all kinds of problems, can't they?
Yes, you're absolutely right. Sometimes you will get outgassing, and you know you'll get bubbles that could occur in the paint if you're painting on an already sited home. Another thing to consider as well is that I'd caution a little bit about the use of the felt at the butt joints, because felt will wick and hold moisture. I would think that there may be some better alternatives that won't hold any moisture at butt joints. My experience with some of these newer cement boards is that they, if they're not nailed properly, and this is true for any siding,
sure,
really to follow the manufacturer's recommendation for nail spacing, nail type. Otherwise, what can happen, and you see this a lot, is that you'll get a waviness to the side of the siding, and it looks terrible. And also, if it's not nailed properly, it will shrink and swell more during hot and cold weather, and therefore leave openings for moisture to get in and cause problems as well.
Yeah, we found if we nail into cement board and you nail it a little too far and dimple in, sometimes the material will start to pull itself right through, and you'll get a wave in it. So I think the trick is to nail it so that the head of the nail isn't all the way through the all the way into the cement board, but it's nice and snug. So,
well, I've seen some horrific, mistakes where the nailing was not enough, and mm-hmm. so you get some real bowing effects from that. But also some of these products, the newer ones, in particular, have industrial byproducts in them, and also gypsum-based products. And some of these kinds of things are very sensitive to expansion by moisture. And that's why they come apart sometimes, and that's why it's not good to put just plain wallboard in your shower, to kind of use a treated special wallboard for that.
That's a good point.
So I think the jury is still out on some of the products. I know you're poo-pooing a little bit the vinyl, but we know vinyl for the last 100 years has worked very well.
Well, I just want to say I'm not really poo-pooing it. I don't think we either of us are. I think we're saying that as a product that has aesthetics, has is a product that's expensive to make in terms of environmental costs, it's not really the most environmentally friendly choice because of PVC's inherent nature. So that's basically what we're saying, that we like more natural products, we like some of the hardier products, I guess, or some mm-hmm. of the things.
I agree that that's probably true, but at the same point, what I see a lot of, and unfortunately this is more common than I'd like to see, is a lot of the green products have not gone through some of the due diligence that they need to for serviceability and durability in the long term. Mm. These are relatively new products. Some of them are by entrepreneurs who don't understand just the things we're talking about, environment, placement, other things of that nature, sourcing raw materials.
We do see a lot of green products come and go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
right.
For that very reason, because they hadn't been thought through. I remember back in the early days of environmentally friendly adhesives, there was a construction adhesive that failed 95% of the time, and that's
sure.
not good.
Yep.
Yep.
Jim, thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. We have a question about mold and mildew from Paul, who emailed in. How do you clean mold mildew from stucco siding, John?
You power wash it, basically.
Yeah.
If this is exterior insulation finish system, the good news is we have some new products. Now, as Ken just said, they haven't been out long, but I have just specified a new product for an exterior insulation finish system house. And this, my understanding, is nanotechnology. This is a paint that is applied. And after exposure to ultraviolet light, it raises tiny little microscopic bumps, and it actually breaks the surface tension of the water, so the water won't stick to the walls. It'll fall off. The demonstration of it was fairly amazing, and we will be putting this on the house, and if it works, I'll be able to report on that in a future program.
This
point, we're going to have to power wash, but if these new products work, we're going to have to power wash much less often because our exterior insulation finish system and stucco are not going to get as dirty as quick.
Oh. Well, Mary Jo had a stucco question, too. Her home was built in the 50s, cement block with stucco. The stucco's in great shape except for a couple of cracks. Years back, I caulked the cracks, but now the caulk needs replacing. I have no signs of the stucco deteriorating. Does painting stucco make sense? I like the looks of the stucco, and I'm afraid painting will make it appear too flat, she kind of says. What would you recommend for maintenance in this situation?
Very important to keep moisture out. I am suspecting from the age of this house and the type of house that it has an expanded wire lath that is nailed to the backup wall. And if that expanded wire lath gets wet, even though it's galvanized, it's going to rust. And then the water is going to enter those cracks. We're going to get what's called rust jacking. It's going to break up the surface. So we need to make sure that those cracks are well sealed. Generally, caulking does not work terribly well, but there are crack sealants that you can put on. I've even seen people do it with a toothbrush, working it right into the crack. And painting that stucco probably makes a lot of sense. Now, again, just with metal siding, paint manufacturers make specialized paints for cementitious surfaces. We need to make sure that she hires a good quality contractor with a good quality product, and this should not have to go on so thick that it really changes the look of her house.
There's one thing I'd like to add, though. If she had someone take a look at this, an expert in stucco applications, she may be able to have this crack fixed and feathered out, and the color match could be very good if the stucco installer knows what he's doing. So that might be the first thing to do, is just have a professional look at it and give their opinion, don't you think?
It is possible. It generally is. You can try to match. Usually what you end up doing is you end up finding some stucco you can take off, you grind it up, you add it in with the cement, and you work it in, and it still ends up being a little bit lighter. But this is, there are very few people that know how to do this correctly. Most people just take a caulk gun and smear it on.
My guy retired many years ago, so.
Yeah. Ron in La Crosse, hello.
Yes, I'd like to tell a story. We had steel siding put on back in 1982, and after a number of years, the paint lost its luster, got chalky. Well, there was a couple of guys came to our front door, and they noticed how chalky the paint was, and they offered to apply a clear coat, a special product, and they did, and it looked a lot better. It restored the luster and everything, and I was happy for a while. But then after a number of years, the siding began to get dirty. And the upshot on this, several years, I noticed where they missed spots applying the clear coat. And wherever they missed a spot, the siding was still clean. But anyway, I ended up having to use an electric steam gun, greased lightning, and all this other product to remove the dirt from the house. So It's, you know, it's kind of a two-edged sword. You restore the luster, but we live along a throughway here in La Crosse. A lot of traffic, and I began to suspect that a lot of the dirt came from exhaust emissions. It's something, you know, it's better probably just to have it repainted.
Well, there you go. Thank you for calling, Ron. John, that sound makes sense to you?
I have heard of some clear coats, and I think that Ron gives good advice. Let's just paint, because the paints are as hydrophobic as we can make them. They try to shed water, and when they shed the water, they shed the dirt. And, of course, this idea that he's near a street and he's getting oil and soot. If the clear coat was sort of a hydrophilic thing, it probably attracted this oil and soot.
Thanks again, Ron. Kurt in Potosi, hello.
Hello. I have a question about moisture in a basement. It's actually my daughter and her husband's house. They have a cement block basement, and they do not have water coming in. It's just high humidity. Last summer, they didn't have a problem, but that's probably because it was a drought. So this summer, which is the second year they've been here, they've noticed real high humidity. Does the possibility of putting some kind of coating on the inside of a house help reduce the humidity? Or
No, that's it's a nice idea, but it doesn't work. And The best thing you could do with cement block, they call them CMU, you might hear it that way, cement, I forget what it's called. Concrete masonry unit. They're very porous, and if you have high moisture in the ground around the area, they will weep, they will get moist, they will get very high humidity. They could run a dehumidifier. How old's the house, Kurt?
I think the house is about 35 years, maybe.
Do they have
like
a sump pump?
I don't believe so. They're in Eau Claire, so it's a sandy area. I believe the drainage is quite good.
The drainage is good. So, you know, they could try running a dehumidifier. They could, if they keep the windows open in the basement in the summertime, that really destroys any possibility of keeping the basement dry, because earlier in the show we were talking about concrete that stays cool, and as it gets warm out, it attracts moisture. It becomes basically a dehumidifier, and water collects on it. It's like
I don't think they have windows in the basement.
Okay, The next thing you could do is dig around the outside and put there are seal coats, waterproof membranes outside that can be done. It doesn't sound like that's really.
Would you go all the way down for that, or would it be helpful even to go, you know, 4 foot down?
Well, I'd try to do the whole thing if I could. I mean, if you're in for a dime, you're in for a dollar on that. But I don't know. Can you add anything to this, John? I think that's.
I think dehumidification is the simplest.
Yeah.
When that house was built, we probably did not even have a vapor barrier under the cement concrete floor.
Yeah.
So we have vapor moving through probably all of the below grade surfaces. So let's just dehumidify. I think in the long run, as long as you have a good quality dehumidifier, and of course you can go to Focus on Energy to see what is good, you're going to spend a whole lot less money mechanically dehumidifying than you are trying to do some sort of permanent solution.
Yeah, you could spend a lot of money trying to put seal coats on the inside, and it may work for a couple of years, and then after that it's going to create so many problems you're not going to you won't be happy. Good luck.
I appreciate your time and your advice. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. We have an email from Nancy in Chippewa Falls. Has a 20-year-old house with vinyl siding and crank-out windows. The lower horizontal windows on many of the, the lower horizontal window sills on many of the windows are rotting, not occurring from the top since I tried to refinish the sills. How can we repair this, and can we prevent further damage? John?
Well, the problem is, this is one of these things where if we can't see it, it's hard to offer an opinion, Larry. But unfortunately, we've spoken several times about the Walmart culture. Mm-hmm. We do have windows that are sold in Wisconsin that are finger jointed, basically out of scrap wood. And those things simply have a 20-year life, and that's about it. And what is probably happening is water is sitting there, it's gone into it, and the windows are rotting. It may be possible that a skilled person can rebuild those. But I don't think we have too much, we really don't have enough information here.
Okay.
We have to be extremely careful with these inexpensive finger-jointed windows because that wood, usually there's a piece of sapwood, there's a highly porous, highly rottable piece of wood in the construction, and that goes to pieces and takes the rest of the window with it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. We have Bill in Cottage Grove next. Hi, Bill. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good morning. A question about a detached garage, which has been in place for about 20 years. It was sided with what they call hardboard siding, which is almost like a masonite, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But seems to be very hydrophilic. There are places where water seems to have gotten in someplace and bubbled up and creating problems. And I'm wondering what the best material is to replace those. I don't want to do the whole garage, but there are certain places where it needs to have attention before it gets worse. So I'm wondering what your suggestion might be to replace that area.
Well, first of all, this stuff, once it starts to bubble up, it's really not going to get, I mean, there's no way you're going to save it. Its life is short. What do you have on your house?
We have vinyl siding, which we put on after we had aluminum siding hit with that hailstorm a few years ago.
Oh, sure. Well, why don't you do the same thing? You could do the same thing on the whole garage, probably not very expensively.
That's one option. I was just trying to find a way, at least for this particular winter and fall, to replace some of these areas and perhaps do something more next year.
Okay. Well, would you be doing the work yourself?
Yes.
So
I'm just looking for what kind of material you might suggest that would be similar.
Similar to the masonite?
A concrete board or something of that sort where...
I believe that Hardy Board makes a product that looks very similar. I wouldn't intermix them. I would do one wall.
Okay.
And then maybe the following year do another wall. Put it on a 3 or 5 year plan. But
Hardy
I think
board.
You could... Yeah, I think Hardy Board you can get. How much? What's the exposure? About 10 inches?
It's about 8 inches, actually.
Oh, yeah, you can do Hardy Board. It's any cement board, you can get a 10-inch to the weather material. I think they're 11.5 inches, and then you overlap them.
Okay, and that would be painted and primed, or primed and painted the same as you might other.
You could order it pre-finished. The problem that you're going to have is you don't have the special tools to install it. So you'll want to have a professional installer because they have, they'll have a diamond blade or at least a masonry saw. They'll have the correct nailers for it. Mm-hmm. If you try to do it yourself, John says this over and over again, download the installation information, talk to professionals, give it a try. Try it on the back of the garage first, because if you mess it up, you don't have to look at it all the time.
Right, right. Good advice.
So good luck to you.
Thanks for your help.
Yeah,
thank you for calling. We have, here's an email from Lori. One day my husband grilled too close to our vinyl-sided house. I could not get the grease stains out. The local paint store matched the color of the siding, and more than 15 years later, you can't tell it was a paint repair job.
Well, that's great news. You know, I thought she was going to say that she melted the siding. I have fixed at least a half a dozen projects where people have melted their siding with their grill. So that's a story with a happy ending.
Chris in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. I've got a 40-year-old house, and we're trying to finish off the basement. And I think sometime in the late 60s or early 70s, they adhered a tile to the basement floor. And the floor is uneven. You know, there's little potholes and that kind of stuff. All the tile is sticking. I was contemplating using self-leveling concrete to level that area off and then seal it, stain it, and put down a rug. Do I need to take that tile up, or can I put the self-leveling concrete over it?
John?
What kind of surface does the upper surface of the tile have? Is it something very glazed and slick, or is it something a little bit more matte that something might stick to?
It has a texture to it. It has like a pattern engraved in it. It is more of a matte finish, so like if it's wet or something like that, it's not real slippery.
Okay.
My concern is I'm suspecting it could have asbestos in it.
Is it ceramic
it's
tile?
It's down with a heavy black adhesive, because you can see it oozing kind of where the walls come down.
So it's a vinyl, most likely a vinyl asbestos tile, 8-inch by 8-inch tile or 9-inch by 9-inch with black adhesive.
9-inch by 9-inch, yeah.
Now, the problem with that is that adhesive is going to react with water, and if you put a self-leveling concrete over it, all the tile are going to come loose. So I'm afraid that those probably are going to have to be taken up, and you would be wise to check for asbestos content. The tile itself probably has asbestos, but it may be non-friable. However, the adhesive could also have asbestos and be friable. So you may have to have that removed by a person who is certified as an asbestos abatement contractor, or come up with a floating floor system that you can simply put over the top of it. Yeah. If you put it in a floating floor system, take a look at insulating it. There are several very good systems out there, and that is going to be so much cheaper and less problematical for you.
And safer.
Well, it depends.
It also depends on how much headroom you have.
Relative that removes asbestos. So you're saying that the liquid could release the tile from the adhesive.
Right, the moisture in the liquid.
Okay.
Generally, when we inspect houses, when we find VAT in the basement, we can tell there's a leak in a wall or moisture coming in by it loosening up, because that black adhesive loosens up with moisture. So I'll find part of the floor looks good, part of it's loose. I know where the leak is in that basement. So what you're going to do is you're going to produce a giant leak over the entire floor. So you're probably going to end up with loose tile over the entire floor. So I would think about having your relative take it out, since you're such a good guy, at a lower free cost, or going over the top.
And thank you very much for calling in, guys. Ken, John, thank you so much. Time flew once again.
Yeah, it's a great show. It's really good calls.
Lots of great calls. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg. We have some keys to get a hold of them on our website, I believe. Yes, we do, at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can go right there and learn how to get a hold of them. Garden Talk tomorrow. The Vicars of Vegetables join us. That'll be fun. Stay with us.